everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Forever Saturday podcast, because it is always college football Saturday in our house. I'm Serena, better known as SGeorgeatR on social media.
And I'm Matt, also at MattSwartz723. And it's game week. Let's go.
I did not remember. It's not that I didn't remember that it was game week. I obviously know that. But I really do feel like it snuck up on me. And so today, of course, and we're going to lead with this, it was made official that Bryce Underwood is going to be starting for Michigan this week.
Sorry, who's that?
Bryce Underwood. Have you heard of him?
Oh, right. Yeah. Got it.
So they make this announcement, and I'm like, man, so early? It's still camp. I'm like, man, they really made that. Serena, we play a game in 5 days. So,
it's time.
Yeah. This is when they do that, actually. Game week is when they announce who the quarterback is often. And it just took me a minute to be like, oh, wow. We are actually here. We have arrived.
We are here. And Bryce Underwood is here, too, because I don't know if you saw all of Sharon's commentary about Underwood and just sort of the Q&A, with the press after the announcement. But one of the things that he was asked was, so when did you know that Underwood was going to be named the starter? And he said, probably about halfway through fall camp. It was our first scrimmage in the big house. So we're in the stadium, first time out there. And he made a couple throws where I was just like, whew. And I looked over at Chip and he looked at me and just kind of nodded like, yep.
I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, no, it's going to be fun.
I'm sure there will be ups and downs, but
of course. And so let's come back to that, because I know we want to touch on a couple other things with regard to the depth chart announcements today, which were pretty interesting. But I do want to talk a little bit more about Underwood and what we think that means, what's reasonable in terms of expectations this year, given what we've seen, given what history kind of indicates. But so we found out Underwood is starting, obviously. Jaden Davis was also named the backup, which kind of indicates that Keene still isn't fully healthy. I think the expectation was that was kind of the purpose of having him. So hopefully this is not a Jack Tuttle situation last year where he really never got healthy and never got the chance to be that.
Well, I was just going to ask, if you're Mikey Keene and, Sharon's comments were not ambiguous, right? They knew some time ago that Underwood would be the starter. This is a guy in Keene who perhaps doesn't have eligibility left. And I'm not sure if he wants to spend his time sitting behind Bryce Underwood if a true freshman, would he just not come back and leave the program again and try to find another destination for 2026?
I mean, I think he'll certainly be on the roster for fall. He'll be around. Well, I don't know what his situation is. It sounded like from what was coming out of camp that this was something that had lingered for a while but wasn't deemed to be serious, so that he would be ready to go probably sometime early in the season, if not at the beginning of the season. So I assume that's going to be his role anyway, if Underwood's the starter, Keene probably wouldn't be playing much, if at all, in most games. So I suspect that he will be kind of the sitting veteran guy who is there if/when needed. But I don't think he was probably going to be playing a whole lot anyway. Well, this year.
But wouldn't he rather be if Underwood's going to be the guy, I'll just take the medical red shirt and it lingered throughout the year and then leave again. That's
the good news is he could still play in 4 games, right?
Yes.
And potentially still take the red shirt. So I think that's kind of where...
I'm not sure if it works that way if it's a medical red shirt.
But it doesn't matter. I guess I actually don't know if he's taken a regular red shirt or not.
Yeah.
That's something I'd have to look at. But yeah, I don't think it's going to be particularly relevant to Michigan this season or next. given that if they're rolling with Underwood now, Underwood's the guy. So it's just a matter of, a matter of depth, basically.
Yeah, I hear you.
We also found out, got a little more clarity on the depth chart at receiver. That was kind of interesting. Channing Goodwin was named one of the quote-unquote top three. It was Donovan McCauley, Samaj Morgan, and Channing Goodwin. Whereas I think we'd been kind of expecting all offseason that it was going to be Freddie Moore after the way last year ended. But also I know Goodwin had been kind of on the rise. People had been bringing him up more and more throughout the offseason and in fall camp. So it's probably a good sign for him at least, and maybe for the receiver core upside in general. Since Goodwin's a true sophomore, he came in with some Ronnie Bell comps. like not an unbelievable athlete, but good athlete, good route runner. If you remember, he was at the same high school as Jaden Davis.
I did not remember that.
Yeah, they came in together. And as a true sophomore and somebody who played a little bit last year, it kind of seems like he's taken some jumps to where, you know, if he's already sort of jumping past guys who are a class ahead of him, that would seem to bode well, I think. And I mean, I think this is another situation where it's not just going to be those three guys. This isn't like quarterback where you've got a guy. I assume you're still going to see a significant amount of rotation, whether that's, you know, Samaj with Anthony Simpson in the slot or maybe Goodwin in the slot and, you know, Freddie Moore getting some snaps on the outside. I think they've got enough guys there who haven't really separated themselves meaningfully in terms of on-field performance that all of those guys are going to get opportunities. So I'm interested to see what that looks like, and especially with real quarterback play that we didn't get last year, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's right. That is an interesting development because I feel like, you know, Moore had like a pretty decent bowl game too, and a pretty decent spring game. So it is kind of an interesting development that he got jumped, perhaps one that bodes well. But yeah, I thought that was kind of an interesting tidbit today too when I heard it.
We heard Kendrick Bell get brought up a couple times recently too as another guy who was in the rotation at least. So we'll see. You know, like I said, I think Moore is going to get a decent number of snaps. Bell, you'll probably see out there. Like, I think they're going to give all these guys opportunities and try to figure out as they go along who has the best rapport with Underwood, who's kind of, you know, differentiating in some sort of skill set on the outside beyond what they know McCulley brings.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll see Marsh too.
That's right. Yeah, they did mention Andrew Marsh as somebody who's going to play, and apparently is the starting kick returner and maybe punt returner.
Interesting.
I am still of the belief that you should not return kicks in general unless you're like Jordan Marshall level good at it, because otherwise you're just burning yards every time, basically.
Yeah, we've been fucking shitty at it too for like a long time.
And honestly, most teams are not very good at it, but like if you don't have an elite returner who's consistently getting the ball past the 25, just don't bother. Like that continues to be my stance. So we'll see. We'll give Marsh a few opportunities and see if that holds.
On the other hand, last year I kind of understood why they were doing it, because that offense was so abject that, like, if you could, you know, if you could break one and get yourself across the 50 or whatever, right, it was perhaps worth the...
Maybe your best chance at scoring.
Yeah, but for like a normal team that doesn't have to play like that, I agree with you.
Yeah, hopefully this Michigan team is not one of those teams that requires that.
Yeah, please. And thank you, because I don't... Like I said, we talked about this a lot last year, that we were like on the beach, as we referred to it. The Michigan fans are still on the beach, I believe, was something that came out of Spencer Hall and, you know, the full cast folks about how Michigan was going to be treating this season. But even though I was on the beach, that offense was still hard to watch.
Like, it was brutal to watch.
It was so bad that I was like, okay, fine. Like, you don't have to win all the games anymore. I don't care. We have our trophy. None of this matters. But, like, God, don't make it, like... I just felt like someone was sticking something under your fingernails.
You're being, like, punished.
Yeah. Like, I was just like, oh, this is shitty. Like, please don't be that. Yeah, just don't be that.
No. Inshallah.
Look at you. Look at your Arabic.
I'm so cultured.
You're so cultured.
The only other kind of noteworthy thing, I think, was the offensive line depth chart, where we had Brady Norton named the starter at right guard ahead of Nate Ifobe. I think for most of the offseason, we've been talking about it being either Ifobe or probably Lawrence Hatar, who transferred in from Ferris State. But then on the BTN Roadshow the other night, Moore did pretty specifically say that it's Brady Norton and Nate Ifobe who are competing at that spot. And remember, we didn't talk much about Norton when we did our offensive preview, just because people hadn't brought him up a lot in terms of the starting group. But he came in from FCS Cal Poly, and we didn't really know what to make of him at the time, because he played left tackle last year. He was really highly regarded in terms of like what he did at a lower level as a freshman starter. But he was listed on the depth chart at like 270, and we were looking at that going like, what exactly do you do with that? You probably got to put 20 or 30 pounds on him before you even figure out what he can be for you. But he got to Michigan and said that he was actually playing last year at like 300, that he was way underlisted on the depth chart. And now he's already at 315. So he's obviously
a big boy.
Right. He's a big boy. And if he was, you know, playing left tackle, doing well in protection at 300-ish pounds last year, and you can put on a little more bulk, that's an interesting player. And I think people got really kind of up in arms about this after the announcement, because I think in part because of what happened last year when Evan Link kind of won the job out of nowhere, yeah, and Dom Judis also jumped past Greg Crippen at the last minute, and it seemed like they didn't have a great sense of what they wanted to do on the line. This one, I don't know if I would say it feels quite the same, just because with Ifobi, Hatar, and Norton, we had three guys who we really have no meaningful FBS experience for. Like, I just didn't know what to make of any of them.
Right. Like, I'm not sure what the difference is between somebody who was playing at Ferris and someone who was playing at Cal Poly. Like,
right. You've got one FCS school, one D2 school, and then one guy who was kind of up and coming and has gotten a lot of good, like, press from the coaches. But we hadn't actually seen him do it in a game setting. So I guess to me it doesn't move the needle very much one way or another to say that one of those guys won and, oh God, I should be concerned because that wasn't the guy that we assumed was going to be the likely starter going into camp. So, yeah, I don't see, you know, any one of those being necessarily better or worse. It sounds like what's been coming out today and kind of the aftermath is that the insider talk or the coach talk is that Norton is just better in protection. And they felt like that gave them a little bit of a leg up there, given that the rest of the line generally in the Sherrone Moore / Jim Harbaugh era has been less geared toward that. It's been more geared toward pound smash. We're going to punch you in the face. And if we have to throw, we'll figure it out.
Right. I mean, even in a year when Michigan won a national title, it wasn't a very good pass blocking line.
Well, and that line was basically playing five guards.
Right. Yes.
I mean, Henderson, right, at left tackle, like he was kind of a guard tackle swing, a little bit like Ifobi or like Norton. But when that's your left tackle and that's supposed to be your best pass protector, that's kind of indicative of, you know, what you are like from a mentality standpoint if you have a guard playing left tackle.
Right.
Anyway, that was pretty much it. Nothing really significant on the defensive side. Trey Pierce, Cole Sullivan, Mason Curtis all got talked up a little more as they have kind of all through camp. Seems like the secondary is pretty clearly Jair Hill at one corner spot, Zeke Berry at the other, Brandon Hillman definitely starting at one safety spot, and then some combination of Curtis, TJ Metcalf, Jaden Mangum, kind of in between the other safety spot and nickel. I think there's going to be a ton of positional versatility there, which should be kind of interesting in terms of what they can do with coverages. And I mean, we know Michigan likes to be very complex there, disguise things, move people around. So having some of that should be a benefit.
Yeah, I think that's right. The defense, the whole time we've known it's going to be much more set. Right. There's much less holes that need filling on that side of the ball, as I feel like is typically the case with Michigan. You know, I feel like it's been very frequent where we're like, we kind of know what the defense will be there.
Yeah.
A couple of spots on offense, usually on the line or at receiver, where we're like,
Of those groups has been like consistent top 10 in the country, if not top 3 or 1 in the country. And the other one has been less of that and much less of that at certain times, like last year.
Right. So nothing major there. Is it time to talk about our first opponent?
I think we can talk a little bit about our first opponent. I don't know if we need to talk much about that team because, well, it'll become apparent once we start talking about that team, if you don't know anything about New Mexico, but this is probably going to be one of the worst teams in the country this year. They kind of unexpectedly lost Bracco Mendenhall as coach to Utah State back in December. And then they lost a pretty good quarterback from last year and their offensive coordinator, both to Utah. And obviously New Mexico is just not the kind of program that can lose coaches, coordinators, best players, and replace those guys with something comparable. It's a pretty tough place to win and a place that's never won with any sort of consistency or significance. So they did replace Mendenhall as head coach with Jason Eck from Idaho, where he did reasonably well there with a couple FCS playoff appearances. And Eck brought his quarterback with him, which should help a little in terms of continuity. But the flip side of that is they were 132nd out of 134 teams in SP Plus defense last year.
So you're telling me this is perhaps not the scariest first test for the likes of Bryce Underwood?
Yeah, yeah. This year they are projected 134th out of 136. So real bad.
I can't tell if I like that or if I hate that.
I mean, I think...
I just feel like there's going to be like whiplash going to Oklahoma in a week.
There is. I mean, there is. But that's also probably going to be inevitable. Like, you're going to start with Oklahoma or you're going to start with somebody who's...
But couldn't you get someone who's like 70th on defense, you know, where it's like, okay...
You needed Fresno State this year.
Good, yeah, but it's not like abject. Because, man, can you imagine the whiplash of going from like literally the worst defense in America to like a top 10 defense like very quickly like that? That's kind of a lot. Like, I would almost rather them be 80 spots better.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's a tough call. I don't mind having just a game to get people comfortable, especially like Underwood. It's going to be a first time in this, like, not in the stadium at all, but his first time actually playing a game at Michigan or in Michigan Stadium. I just feel like the nerves. It's going to be nice to have some margin for error, I guess. And I don't think he's going to need a lot because, I mean, again, this is going to be a really bad New Mexico team. Just to kind of circle back to what I was saying before, like, the offense should be a little bit better than the defense. It shouldn't be, you know, one of the two or three worst in the country. But even there, they're projected 98th after finishing 64th last year, which on the whole puts them at 130th in SP+.
So they were 98th in offense last year, which is how many spots away from where we were?
No, they were 64th.
Oh.
Like 50 spots ahead of Michigan.
They're projected at 98th.
They're projected at 98th this year.
So they're projected to have an offense that was approximately as bad as ours last year.
Correct. They're projected 98th on offense and 134th on defense.
Woof.
So, yeah. And that's why this is Michigan's favored by 36. So, to your point, would you rather have somebody who's kind of a little bit more of a ramp to getting you closer to Oklahoma? Or would you rather somebody who's just like a true preseason game, basically? I don't know. Dealer's choice, I guess.
I might take the ramp, but I hear you.
Yeah. I can see arguments for both ways. But either way, this should be a body bag game. Like, there's very little, I hope there's very little of interest that, like, from a competitive standpoint in this game. The only real thing that I think we're all going to be watching is just, what does Underwood look like? You know, does this look like a guy who is there already as a freshman or not? You know, what does the O-line look like? Even last year against Fresno and against Arkansas State, I mean, there were very early signs of the pass protection problems that became totally untenable. And, like, again, if Arkansas State was doing it, New Mexico is terrible, but Arkansas State was also terrible. So, like, if there are major problems, you're probably going to identify them, at least to some extent.
Sure. Let's hope we see no such thing.
That would be great.
Or else it's going to be pretty ugly in Norman because, yeah.
Yeah, probably.
It's not a...
Probably.
Those are not comparable defensive lines, I fear.
They're not. But I guess that's a good sort of segue into just, I think more generally, we wanted to talk a little bit about the vibes and how we're feeling about this team. It's a lot different situation, I think. We were talking about this the other night that for the last five-ish years, I mean, you can go back to 2020, maybe even a little before that, but 2020, the COVID year, like, that was total nonsense. Football was not serious at all.
I didn't even actually think it was going to happen.
Well, right. I mean, we started the season at Halloween and like a 6-game season or whatever. Like, it never felt real or anything that was worth like caring about or putting any real stock into. And then 2021 with like, regardless of how much stock you did or didn't put into 2020, Michigan was so bad that going into 2021, expectations were pretty fucking low.
Right, they just cut Harbaugh's contract in half. No one was happy.
A lot of us went into that year thinking, like, all right, well, does Jim Harbaugh save his job, or is this just a, you know, running out the string until we hire Matt Campbell or whatever? Like, it didn't feel like a season where there was real hope to do anything. And then obviously it turned into something magical and amazing. But going into it, it's hard to say that I was very excited about the 2021 season.
Definitely not.
And then 2022 and 23, with the way that 21 went, and then with, you know, JJ sort of waiting in the wings, it was, are we ready to win a national championship? Because it feels like all the pieces are there to win a fucking national championship, and now we have to do it, because this is a window that we haven't had in a long time.
Right.
And so the stakes just felt so high, especially in 23. And obviously the payoff was there, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, I talk about this all the time, but before the 23 season, I had a cousin visiting from Palestine. Like, he was here, and it was, you know, mid-August, and Matt and I were back home in Michigan so that we could see him where he was, you know, visiting my extended family. And we're, you know, noses in the preview magazines. We're, like, up to our ears in it going into 2023 because we kind of knew this was the shot. So he's asking questions about it. He, like, you know, doesn't know American football all that well. But, like, I very distinctly remember us telling him, like, all right, there are probably four best teams in the country. There's Ohio State, there's Michigan, there's Georgia, there's Alabama.
Yep.
Quarterback is the most important player on the field, and we're the only one of those four teams that returns ours. And that was, like, the thing that we were explaining to him was, like, the reason that the window was as open as it was ever going to be, probably.
And with everything coming back from 2022, it's like, this team has no weaknesses. It has the quarterback that nobody else has. Like, this is it. This has to be it.
And then, of course, it was.
Thank God it was.
And so it is a weird spot, though. We're in a different spot than we have been in a long time. Like, I think the last time.
Well, and then 24. I mean, I was going to throw in there, like, we're all still riding the high. Like, yeah, I don't give a fuck about what happens in the 2024 season.
It wasn't
very fun. But, yeah, we were all at the beach. So over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, it's like expectations are either sky high or they're like, eh, whatever. And it's hard to get super excited about this team. And now, for the first time in a while, you're looking at it going, this should be a really good team, and maybe more, depending on the offense and Bryce Underwood and what that ceiling is and how close he can get to it this year. But it just is different because we're excited and optimistic, but not with the sort of existential dread of, like, oh my God, if we don't win it all, like, this is I'm going to die because this might be my only chance to see one in the rest of my life.
Yeah, it's more like a situation we haven't seen since the likes of 2018 or 2019, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, how good can Patterson be? Like, what does the, you know, we go into South Bend and play that game when John Runyon's a turnstile in 2018, right? It is. It has that kind of feeling of 18-19 where it's like, okay, they should be pretty good. We don't know exactly what we have. We
right.
have reason to be excited. We have reason to be optimistic, but not like, oh my God, it's existential.
Yeah.
We have to do it. It's now or never kind of feeling that has, you're right, kind of tinged like 22 and 23.
Even those teams, I would say to some extent, like, we still had the Ohio State, like, monkey on the back or whatever you want to call it, that even when you were thinking about, oh, these teams could be really good, there's also the question of, like, yeah, but could we actually beat Ohio State? And if not, you can't fucking win anything anyway. And now that's been stripped away, and it's like,
and
there's
also,
no,
that's structurally gone because,
right, there's no, like, glass ceiling that if
but that's not even what I mean. I mean, the 12-team playoff has killed that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like, it's,
no, I mean,
structurally gone from the
right,
sport.
Both the Ohio State monkey and the structure of, if you can't beat them, you have no chance to win anything. Like, all of that is removed. So now there really is no ceiling.
Right.
Like,
the 18 team makes the playoff. The 16 team makes the playoff.
Right.
The 19 team is on the cusp of the playoff. Like, it, you know, it's there. It's just, there's a lot more room for,
yeah,
for getting in, and like it's just a structurally, it's a different sport than it was in 2018 and 2019.
Right. So it's just all around kind of a different vibe, and one that's pretty fun, I think. Like, I feel really excited about this team and what it can be. So I guess in that vein, I have a couple questions here that I'm kind of curious to get your take on this, because we haven't talked about it and I have a take. So we'll see if we have different, you know, different things that,
yeah,
we identify here.
We didn't align on this in advance. Often we do, but not now.
All right. So what is one thing that you kind of feel best about with regard to this team overall? And there are a couple kind of easy ones that
front seven.
You can, I think that's probably a pretty good one.
Front seven. I just think that, like, of course, I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum, but, like, replacing Graham and Grant is terrifying. But also, if we were looking at this any other time except to replace, like, two first round picks and maybe the best defensive tackle in Michigan history, we'd be looking at who we have coming in to play this year and going, that's exciting. That looks good. I'm excited,
yeah,
about that. It's just that they have, like, literally fucking impossible shoes to fill, I fear. And so to that end, it's like they're getting, I think, a little discounted by the fact that people know that they will not be Graham and Grant and that defensive tackle situation. But I think on the whole, the front seven I feel very comfortable with.
Yeah, I mean, I said this on the defensive preview episode that I do think this might be the best front seven in the country. Like, across the board, the starters they have, Benny, Moore, Guy, Barham, Hausman. I mean, you have, like, five guys who I think are going to be in the All-America discussion. And then you've got incredible depth at defensive tackle that I'm not sure Michigan or any – I'm not sure I can think of a team that has had the overall quality of defensive tackle play that Michigan's going to be able to rotate through this year. Assuming guys stay healthy, obviously.
Yeah.
But even then, I mean, to the extent that, you know, a guy goes down for a game or two, like, having that depth then becomes maybe an even more important luxury.
Agree. That's the thing I feel the best about. That's the thing where I'm like, I'm not worried about it.
I think that's probably a pretty good one. I would take either the front seven or the running backs. I think Marshall and Haynes is unbelievable combination. I think both of those guys are, I'll say the same thing about them. I think either one could be an All-American if not for the fact that both of them are probably going to have 120-plus carries and steal yards and touchdowns.
It's funny that you say that because this is going to be the first of two times today that we do this. We very rarely break from our counterparts at MGO Blog. Like, very often I look at what Brian and Seth have to say and I go, yeah, they're very smart, good football observers. But I listened to their offense preview last week, and Brian in particular was very down on the running backs room. And I think it was just that he doesn't think either of them is Mullings. Like, he doesn't think either of them is as good as... He really likes Mullings and doesn't think either of them is as good as Mullings. But I'm looking at that running back room like you. Maybe not quite as high on them as you, but I'm looking at that going, great. I'm very optimistic about this. This looks very good to me. Like, I watched Marshall in the bowl game.
Yeah.
I don't understand what there is to be concerned about, but his take was, like, I thought pretty pessimistic.
Yeah, that was a very surprising one to me and one that I don't quite follow just because, I mean, Khalil Mullings was a very good running back and he did, he was,
I mean,
other than Colson Loveland.
He single-handedly won two games.
Right, other than Colson Loveland, he was really the only player on the field that you ever felt good about Michigan giving the ball to. And for a team that managed to win games, like, you got to give him some credit for that. And he was, I think, a pretty unique skill set on the fact that he was built like a power back and capable of running through guys like a power back, but had the footwork of a much smaller, more nimble player.
Yeah, he was so good on his toes. Like,
right.
He just felt like he could pick through stuff. Yeah.
But I honestly think Marshall and Haynes both have kind of a comparable skill set. They just do it in a slightly different way. They're both a little bit smoother, but both are very good at running through contact, running through tackles. I mean, I think Jordan Marshall broke 8 or 10 tackles against Bama. Justice Haynes had half of his yards last year after contact. And these are guys who are not just power backs. I mean, you watch these guys, and they were both borderline 5 stars for a reason. And it's not just they run over guys.
Yeah.
Like, these are really talented running backs who I think, like I said, I feel great about them and the fact that they're both going to be there to kind of spell each other and give each other opportunities to be fresh late in the games when Michigan wants to do what Michigan has done, which is punch you in the mouth in the fourth quarter and wear you down. Like, again, I think either or both of these guys could be All-Americans, if not for the fact that they're going to take carries and yards away from each other. I think both of them are that good, and will show it in this kind of offense where teams aren't going to be able to put 9 guys in the box and hit you with, you know, because you just run out of blockers and there's no downfield threat to pull safeties out of the box or to pull linebackers away. Like, that's just not going to be a thing this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just surprised at how pessimistic a take I thought that was.
Agreed.
Especially given that, like, and, you know, of course, no offense to our King Donovan Edwards, you know, who was great in the 22 Ohio State game, who was, you know, but, like, the title game is so emblematic, right? I mean, he, like, runs into his own lineman, like, and then bounces out and is gone.
Right.
And he has the ability to do that, but he, you know, last year we got...
It was a pretty bad year.
A D version of Donovan Edwards.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, despite the fact that Mullings was great and really, really put the team on his back in tremendous ways, like, that wasn't overall, I think, a stellar running back room. Mullings was individually, I think, quite stellar. But,
right,
like, the sum of the two was not great. And when you're looking at Haynes and Marshall, I'm going, I think that has every ability to, in the aggregate, be better than what we saw a year ago. So agreed. I was just a little puzzled by that take. I didn't fully understand it. It might be the case that neither one of them is as good as Mullings, but together they should be better. I don't know. I just thought it was weird. I'm trying to understand, but I'm also kind of putting words in Brian's mouth. I just didn't get it.
I think that is probably his interpretation. I disagree with that in the sense that I think both of these guys are as good as Mullings and could be better. And the fact that you have, like you said, that you're replacing a bunch of Donovan Edwards carries with somebody who is almost certainly a substantially better running back and doing it in an offense where hopefully some of that space will be a little bit more open.
Though we're rooting for him, of course. Like, he had, I think, a touchdown in one of the Jets.
He did, yeah. And it looks like he's in line to make the roster. Yeah. Assuming there are no surprise cuts here in the last few days for the Jets.
I think it's tomorrow, right?
Yeah, certainly rooting for him. But like you said, it was a pretty down year for Dono. And I think if you were to look at that running back room as kind of a collective, you would say, I don't know, B performance. Maybe an A for one guy and a C for the other.
The worst running back room since 2020, right? I mean,
easily, because everything, like,
Haskins, Corum was better, like Corum Edwards was better, like,
right, and then you had Corum Edwards and Mullings in 23. It was easily the worst of the past 4 years.
So I'm like, again, I was very, like, a little bit baffled by the take that, like, they might not be as good, because I was like, bro, that wasn't even like,
yeah.
I know we got very accustomed to very, very good running back play, so we are, like, a touch spoiled in that regard, but I was like, seems to me that there's room to be better than that. I don't know, whatever.
No, I think we're going to feel pretty good about the running back play this year. All right, what do you feel worst about, or what's, like, your biggest concern?
I mean, worst is hard. There, of course, we have to flip back over to the offensive side of the ball, because I think it's not the defense in any meaningful way that I could pick as something to feel worst about. But I don't know that there's one thing that I'm like, this is the worst. I have, like, questions about the O-line and its protection. I have, we have heard about receiver, and Michigan's receiver situation has been a plague on its house for a long time. But, like, is it possible that the thing I'm the most worried about and also the most excited about, maybe simultaneously, is Underwood himself? Which is to say, listen, he's a freshman quarterback. Like, at the end of the day, even the most talented freshman quarterback is a freshman quarterback. They do dumb shit from time to time.
Occasionally.
And so I'm like, am I concerned about that? A little. Because I look at the schedule and go, okay, it's much more favorable than it was a year ago.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly. But also, you know, there are a couple of teams on it that I expect to be a little bit better than they were a year ago. I expect Michigan State to be a little bit better than a year ago. I expect Nebraska, you know, with Raiola and a year of experience under his belt, to be a little bit better. And so I'm going, there are a few games in there that feel very losable if your quarterback does boneheaded freshman quarterback shit.
Sure.
And so I'm excited about it. Very excited about what he is capable of, and also a little bit nervous about it.
You're probably gonna have a little bit more volatility in terms of quarterback play than you've had in most seasons when Michigan has been kind of at this level. I think that's probably a fair statement.
Right. And so, I mean, Michigan hasn't had a true freshman quarterback play in quite some time.
Tate Forcia was the last one.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
God, I forgot about him. My contemporary.
To be fair, Forcia was pretty good. I mean, really, Michigan's freshman quarterback history is kind of remarkably good. It was Rick Leach back in the, 70s, who went 3-1 against Ohio State and started 3 Rose Bowls and ended up as a pro baseball player. You had Chad Henne, who obviously had maybe the best overall quarterback career that anybody's had at Michigan. I mean, he didn't have the highs of JJ, but if you're talking about sort of cumulative stats across 4 years.
Until JJ McCarthy?
I just meant, like, kind of cumulatively across that long of a career. you know, have to put Henny up there with just about anybody at Michigan. And then you had Forcier, who had 1 year and looked very good as a football player, had other issues that ultimately kind of doomed his football career. But
I went to a party with him once where he got mad because people didn't recognize him, like, immediately when he walked through the door and start fawning over him. Like, I'm talking, like, him and I were actually contemporaries, right? So, like, he was a freshman when I was a freshman.
Right. So this was, like, weeks into his Michigan
tenure.
And I
was like, bro, like,
that seems indicative.
I was like, you're kind of nondescript, you know? Like, you don't have, like, you don't have Denard's dreads, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you don't have, like, a particularly distinct... Like, you're just a dude in a hoodie that walked into a frat. He got mad about it, though. I watched it.
Seems like it says some things about maybe why Tate Forcier didn't end up being the player that he looked like he could be as a freshman.
Yeah. Weird.
I'll touch on mine real quickly because I think it's related. Which is, I'm going to go with the pass protection. We saw Evan Link really struggle for a lot of last year at right tackle. And down the stretch last year, he looked better. Still a little shaky, but better. This year, he's going to be kicked over to left tackle. I do think in a perfect world, he would probably not be playing left tackle. I don't know if he would be at guard necessarily or maybe at right tackle, but I just don't think that Michigan has a ready kind of prototypical left tackle right now. And I think their best group includes Link at one of the tackle spots. They do have Sprague on the other side, Andrew Sprague, who people are really excited about. He played the bowl game as a true freshman, started, held up surprisingly well against Alabama. I think the caveat with the down-the-stretch performances, if you're thinking about both Link in the last couple games and Sprague against Bama, is that Michigan didn't really attempt even to have a downfield passing game. Right? Like, they played those games like it was 1950. And it worked. So maybe I can't criticize it too much, but the point is that we haven't really seen those guys succeed in a meaningful way when Michigan is trying to run an actual offense. So I just feel like that gets a little bit of an incomplete grade in terms of what those guys can potentially do. I think Link will be quite a bit better. I think a lot of his issues were just inexperience and figuring out how to get into position to block guys who were speed rushing or, you know, getting accustomed to kind of the speed of guys off the edge and Big Ten play and all of that. I think he'll be meaningfully better even than what we saw down the stretch when he was improved. But I don't think he's an ideal left tackle. And Sprague, like I said, we saw him play against Bama, but we haven't really seen him. It's a very small sample size.
Yeah.
And I just feel like when you're thinking about what Underwood can be and what this offense can be, and I want to spend another minute on that, actually, that's something that could torpedo things a little bit, is if you have a lot of games that look like Texas last year, where they're rushing three and still getting to the quarterback in 1.5 seconds, or... Like Penn State in 2023, where your tackles just flat out cannot keep up with a speed rusher, and so it totally nerfs your passing game. Like that's a problem, and that's something that not even an experienced JJ McCarthy could work around. That still severely limited the offense in that game to the point where they just...
It was also an injured JJ McCarthy.
Injured JJ McCarthy, right.
Yes.
But that could be a limitation. I don't think it'll be that bad in a general sense. Like I said, I think Link will be better. Sprague, they seem very high on. He's one of those guys who looks like he maybe could be longer term the prototypical left tackle, like 6'8". He's got the, you know, the Jake Long, Taylor Lewan setup where it's just like, oh, that looks like a guy who could be a top 10 NFL draft pick. But he was a true freshman last year. And so I don't really know what to expect there. And that's the one thing on the offense where, aside from Underwood, I don't have a great sense of whether that's going to be good enough to make the offense better enough to really get to where we think Michigan could be this year.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think you said something, you snuck something in there, which is you want to talk a little bit about the offense and just like what
Yes.
it will be with Underwood. I think we want to say the same thing.
I want to say a couple things. I was going to start with, and we didn't actually do this a lot in the offensive preview episode. I wish we could have spent more time there. We just kind of ran out. But just what Chip Lindsey wants to do and what that means for Bryce Underwood. And I think that's going to tie into what I'm pretty sure you want to say. But Lindsey wants to push the ball down the field. I think a lot of his passing game is, I'm going to build on a running game that is good. And that's been much of his career. He's followed around guys like Gus Malzahn, who have a very specific idea and generally a very successful idea of what a run game looks like. And I'm going to build my pass game on top of that. And part of having a successful pass game on top of a good run game is getting safeties out of the box, which means you're going to throw the ball down the field. He is going to throw the ball down the field. And I think Donovan McCauley is going to be a big beneficiary of that. And that's going to be a factor. That's going to open things up in the run game. It's going to make things easier on the offensive line, all the things we've talked about. What I'm less sure about is, does he kind of maximize what the offense could be all around? Because I think that means running Bryce Underwood a little bit more.
They're not going to run Bryce Underwood.
Reading between the lines, I don't think they're going to run him very much. Because I think it was Sharon Moore made the comment that, like, well, if you're going to run the quarterback, you better make sure you have two. And I think with, especially with Keen injured, they don't have two.
We don't have two. There's no way. And so,
yeah, I think that part of it will be a little problematic. I think they will do less designed run for Underwood.
And that can be okay. It can be something where you work in a couple keeps a game. You know, you run a couple zone reads a game where he ends up with, I don't know, two, three, four design carries. And then you do a little bit of what Texas did with Vince Young, which is you have 1.5 reads, and read 2B is go do cool shit because you're the best athlete on the field. And so that often meant Vince Young ending up with 10 or 12 carries because he'd have a bunch of scrambles. He, you know, organically, those carries will come about even if you're not designing them. And I think that's probably a more likely outcome for how they handle Underwood this year than trying to build in 7 to 10 carries a game and potentially getting him hit a little bit more than they would probably like, given that there right now at least is just no depth.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The thing I wanted to say was a little bit different than that. And for the second time today, I'm going to take issue with my friends at MGoBlog. But they were talking about how to structure the offense. And they did make a similar comment to you, which was, you know, we probably should be running it more than I expect with Underwood, mm-hmm. more than I expect Michigan to actually do. But the thing that I was going to say, and I was kind of shocked by, to be totally honest with you, is that they were saying, okay, it's a freshman quarterback, right? And we've got to do things to make it easy on a freshman quarterback because freshman quarterback do dumb shit. That was exactly the thing that I said I was like both excited about and fearful of, right? And they do. There's no question that they do. If you watch Nebraska last year, Raiola was great, top quarterback in the country, if I'm not mistaken, but also did his fair share of dumb shit.
He did some dumb shit.
Freshman quarterback, fine. But they kind of advocated for continuing to just ground and pound, like smash some Iowa, some waggle bullshit. Like they were describing an offense that is not unlike the offense that Michigan has been running this whole time for Underwood to run. And I just, you're keeping the Ferrari in the garage.
Yeah.
You are driving the Maserati down the dead-end street. I don't really understand that as an approach because I think there's more than one way to make a freshman quarterback's job easy. And, of course, handing off the ball and leaning on your run game and, you know, doing that is one way. It's certainly one way, and it's probably the way that Michigan is the most familiar with.
And they're going to do some of that this year. Or probably a lot of it.
And I don't want them to, like, abandon their identity as a program. But the other way is to also, like, spread the field out more and, like, give him opportunities to throw the ball. And like, I struggle to believe that that is the only way to keep a freshman quarterback on training wheels while they get their feet under them. Because I look around the country and I see young quarterbacks being successful in offenses that throw the ball a lot more than Michigan's. And I have a hard time believing that, you know, pick a program, like a whatever, not Group of Five school, has like more offensive talent and better quarterback play than what Michigan can expect to get out of
the best quarterback recruit in the history of quarterback recruits. Right. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I just struggle to believe it. And so it's one of those things where I was like, I just don't.
Well, there's also, I mean,
we're never going to get a Ferrari again if you make the Ferrari a handoff merchant.
Right. You're not just not going to get a Ferrari again, but also, like, how are you actually getting better if all you're doing, if you're handing the ball off 35 times a game and then all of your, like, everything where you're asked to be involved
how
is
junior Bryce Underwood going to be meaningfully better than freshman Bryce Underwood if all you make freshman Bryce Underwood do?
If all it is rollouts with three levels of reads and you throw to the one open
run
guy
Davis
on
Warren's
a high-low read. Right.
Like, why are we doing that? I don't get it. I, like, fundamentally don't understand it. And so I'm like, I get it. Do, like, 70% of that. But, like, do 30% of not that. Do 35% of not that. Like, please.
Yeah.
I beg of you.
And I don't think they will. I honestly don't expect that to be what the offense looks like. I think they'll lead on the run game quite a bit. I think this will still be a relatively run-heavy offense from, like, a proportion standpoint. Because when you have running backs like they have on an offensive line, but like they have, I think that's probably still your best way to win games right now and to make development for Underwood easier. To not get him, you know, blown up with pass rush and not ask him to do more than he's ready to do. But I think, like I said, with Chip Lindsey, I think you're going to see him want to push the ball down the field a little bit. I think you're going to see them want to spread it out a little more. I think you're going to see a mix of, you know, they have a really good set of tight ends, fullbacks, H-backs. I think they're going to see different packages there. But I think sometimes you're going to see three, four receivers on the field. And I think they're going to give Underwood some of those opportunities to spread the defense out and make, you know, single reads where, okay, is that safety, you know, shifting over or coming down? That's my read. And I'm going to make it really easy, and I'm going to get a little bit more accustomed to figuring out what safeties are doing and, you know, how to make a little bit more advanced reads as I go along. You have to do that shit or you're never actually going to get better.
Right. What's the point of having a Bryce Underwood if you don't let him fucking do anything?
Right. And I think the other aspect of that is that freshman quarterbacks – I think there's still generally a belief that, like, freshman quarterback equals bad. And that, I think, is a lot less true than it was 10, 15 years ago. I just think that the development that guys go through, like, Bryce Underwood was a starter for all 4 years of high school. He's thrown a fuck ton of passes, not to mention all the time he spent at, you know, 7-on-7 camps and all the other shit
working
that
Elite
11, working with a personal coach. Think about the number of reps that he's taken as a quarterback, whereas it used to be none of that existed. I mean,
like, Tom Brady did not fucking do that.
Right, Tom Brady was not doing that. Tom Brady played 2 or 3 years of high school, and that was it, right? That was what you did as a quarterback. And I just think these guys are, like, so much more advanced now that you can look back over the last few years and find pretty good examples. One of them that I referenced on Twitter, not X, Twitter, is DJ Lagway was the number one quarterback recruit in the country last year. Went to Florida in a somewhat run-oriented offense for Billy Napier. And he put up, I'm going to pull up the numbers here real quickly just because I think it's very relevant. He played about 400 snaps, so roughly half-ish to two-thirds of a season. And he had 60% completions, 1,900 yards, 12 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, 9 yards an attempt.
Didn't he take over for Graham Mertz?
That's right, when Mertz got hurt.
I can't believe Graham Mertz is still in college. I'm sorry. I feel like
he's not anymore.
I know, but was a year ago. Yeah. I can't believe.
He predated COVID, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that was his breakout freshman year when he started at Wisconsin. It was like, oh my God, Wisconsin finally has a quarterback. And then it was
the highest rated quarterback recruit in Wisconsin history,
yeah.
I think.
But yeah, so Lagway played a little bit early in the year. Mertz got hurt. He took over, and he was, like you said, he had some ups and downs. I mean, 12 touchdowns, 9 interceptions is a little bit more of an explode in all directions kind of ratio than you would like. But, I mean, that is, over the course of a full season, if you extrapolate that out to being a full-time starter, 3,000 yards, 24 touchdowns, 9 yards an attempt. Like, that's a good quarterback season. That's legitimately good in a power conference. And, you know, you want to go back to, like, Trevor Lawrence, what he did as a freshman? And people are going to say, like, well, you can't expect everybody to be Trevor Lawrence. And I'm not saying I expect him to be. But I'm saying that when we've been talking about, like, number one overall generational quarterback recruits.
That's what he can be.
That's what Bryce Underwood might be. Yeah. Trevor Lawrence in 2018, 65%, 3,200 yards, 30 touchdowns, 8.3 yards an attempt.
And he didn't start the first several games.
They Kelly Bryant was the starter. Kelly Bryant,
like, four games in.
Right. And to be fair, Clemson had a better supporting cast, especially in the receiver core, than what Michigan's going to have this year.
Undoubtedly.
So I'm not saying that I expect that or that that is, like, a baseline expectation.
Right. It might not even be reasonable.
But I think Lagway's numbers last year, that's, you know, if you, again, if you extrapolate those out times about 1.5 to a full season's worth of snaps, where you're talking 2,500 to 2,900 yards, 20 to 25 touchdowns, like, I do think that's actually a reasonable expectation. I think Underwood can be that. Again, I look at a guy who is very advanced, has played an absolute shit ton of football, has been scouted out the ass by everybody in the in the college football or high school football ecosystem, because for, you know, the last 3 or 4 years, it's been, oh my God, look at this guy. Like, he could be a generationally great player. Like, everybody's been watching him to see what he can be, and the consensus is he might be the best quarterback recruit ever. So I don't think it's fair to go, oh God, freshman QB bad. Expect 6 yards an attempt and 15 interceptions to 10 touchdowns. Like, I don't think this is freshman Terrell Pryor, who was a project and who was never going to be an NFL quarterback, and who Ohio State treated as such because he threw for, like, he threw 150 passes. He had basically Davis Warren's numbers from last year. And Bryce Underwood's not going to be that. Like,
right.
There's just no chance he's going to struggle in that same way or have the kind of handcuffs put on him to only do that, because that's not what he is. He's not a project.
Drive the Ferrari.
Bring the Ferrari out of the garage and put him on the fucking Autobahn and let's see what happens.
Agree. Cosign. 100%.
All right. So that being said, mood meter, you know, the mood meter, right? The little XY axis where it's, I think in the middle, it's like, is what it is. And at the very top right corner, it's like, let's fucking go. And
when you put out the link, you're going to have to tweet this image.
I will tweet the image.
Everybody else, because God only knows. But I do believe that just shy of the upper right, which is like the let's fucking go, all caps, whatever, is like, we're so back or something like that.
All right, so the axes, the x-axis is unpleasant to pleasant, and okay. The y-axis is low energy to high energy.
Okay.
I think last season we were somewhere in the, let's see, the lower left corner is it's so over. The middle is it is what it is. The lower right, as in like pleasant but low energy, is we vibing. I think last year we kind of moved from like it is what it is to we vibing at the end of the year. Like it was never really high energy, just because we knew that team wasn't.
But when you beat Ohio State hilariously.
Right, but it's pleasant, certainly.
Yeah, okay, fine.
If you want to look at the upper left corner, like high energy but unpleasant, fuck it, we ball.
No, we're not at fuck it, we ball.
And then as you move over to the right side, it's we are so fucking back. And then very upper right corner is let's fucking go.
No, I think it's we are so fucking back, because that feels like what 9 to 10 wins is. And
yes,
that's kind of where I feel like we are. I think we're probably straddling the line between 9 and 10 wins, given that the schedule is a lot more advantageous than it was a year ago. I mean, I think there's been much made about it that, like, even Oklahoma, who we all expect to be substantially better, like, I think there was a stat going around that we don't play a team that went better than 500 last year till Ohio State.
I honestly hadn't seen that. That is... God, that might be right.
I think that's like literally true.
Nebraska made a bowl game and USC made a bowl game, but they might have finished 6-6. God, I can't remember for sure.
Like, it's something like that. I don't know if that's the exact stat.
Man.
But it is something like that, where it's like, okay, guys, this is a pretty manageable path. Then again, you look at Michigan, you go, that was basically a 500 team last year. So, like, whatever. But.
No, I'm with you. I'm in we are so fucking back territory. I'm very much there.
Yeah.
Just because, like we were talking about, like, this is a team that should be very good. I think it's going to be one of the best defenses in the country. I think the offense will be significantly improved. And I think the ceiling on Underwood is unlimited. And how much of that ceiling can you explore this year? I don't know, but I'm pretty psyched to find out. And I also think I'm at about 10-2. I think 10 wins is actually very doable, taking kind of a – I generally take, like, a probabilistic view, which is to say, like, I'm not sitting here going – okay, we're going to lose to Oklahoma, but we're going to beat Nebraska. Like, I'm thinking about it a little bit higher level.
There are five games in there that we could go 3-2
right.
in.
I think there are five pretty losable games. I think even outside of Oklahoma and Ohio State, which obviously, you know, I think we know are going to be challenging. Nebraska, USC, Washington. I'll even throw Oklahoma in this bucket. I think all of these teams are going to be better to the point where they could be, like, any slash all of those could be top 15-ish teams.
Right.
And certainly games that Michigan could lose, given that we're going to have some clunkiness slash uncertainty on offense. Like, just being realistic, I think all of those five games are pretty losable. But if you go 3-2 or 4-1 in those games, which is probably about what the Vegas lines are going to suggest, you've got 10 or 11 wins, and you've got a playoff team that, depending on how you progress over the course of the year, where Underwood has gotten to by game 12 or 13.
That's all the more reason to drive the fucking Ferrari, by the way.
Correct, right. Right. And that's going to be a balance of, you know, if you get into a tight Oklahoma game, how do you manage that? You know, is it worth trying to push that a little bit, you know, put the pedal to the metal and find out and potentially lose a game to see if that gets you somewhere different than you otherwise would be by week 13 or a playoff game? Like, that's actually a really interesting question, I think, that I don't know. We don't know the answer, and I'm not sure that Sherrone Moore or Chip Lindsey even know the answer to just yet. I think they're going to have to figure that out as they go. But, again, you look at that schedule and you look at what this team has, and it's not definite by any means, but I think a playoff berth is there for the taking. So go fucking take it.
Agree. I'm excited.
I'm really excited.
This is, like I said, this is the first time in a long time that I've felt excitement without a bunch of pressure.
Yeah, exactly. And Underwood, cool. I think, is a lot of that. That, I mean, to have a guy that this might be the best recruit that the school's ever gotten, ever. And a quarterback that people are talking about as one of the best quarterback recruits ever at maybe the single most position in sports. Like, just to see what that is with the rest of what this team has in terms of talent, coaching, all of it. I'm psyched.
100%. Me too. Can't wait. Do we have any thoughts to wrap it up on what we saw week zero?
I don't have a ton of takeaways from, like, Iowa State, Kansas State. Farmageddon in Ireland was pretty entertaining. Honestly, the single funniest part was probably when they were interviewing people on the street in Ireland and asking them if they knew anything about Kansas State or Iowa State. And they asked one old Irish guy, they said, "Do you know what Kansas State's mascot is?" And he said, "I don't know, but probably something like a tractor," which just spiritually fucking nailed it.
No, it was
nobody so has ever nailed Kansas better.
Correct. Like, I was like, he doesn't even know that he said that for a game nicknamed Farmageddon, and that is so funny. But also that it opened with, like, you know, it's rainy, it's sloppy, that it opened with, you know, a muffed punt, basically.
Oh, yeah.
That they, like, immediately gave right back by throwing a terrible pit. Like, I was just like, oh,
this is perfect college football.
Perfect sport. Welcome back. It's so good to see you again.
I thought you might have more takes on, like, Texas, Ohio State. It's actually a really loaded week one. I'm not sure there's ever been a week one with three top 10 games, which is crazy.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I know Ohio State and Texas fans are bitter that this is the big noon game, but I, as somebody who will be making my way to Ann Arbor, am thrilled that it is a big noon game, because that means I do not have to miss it to get to Ann Arbor in time. So thank you, football gods, for that. It'll be interesting. We were both talking about this. I get it. Defending national champion and all. National champion, air quotes, national champion.
Crazy home record over the last 10, 20 years, whatever. Like, it's really hard to win in Columbus, but...
Well, I know a team that's done it twice in the last couple of years.
Hmm.
But, like, it seems a little surprising to me that Ohio State's favored in that one. We've talked about this. Bill Connolly has them favored. SP Plus has them favored. Vegas has them favored. And I'm looking at that going, okay, they named Saiyan, but there were a lot of reports coming out of Ohio State camp that were giving very 2023 vibes, where it was like neither Devin Brown nor
Kyle McCord.
Kyle McCord and Will Howard are the same to me. I, like, confuse them all the time. I can't remember their names.
It's only gonna get worse as time, like as distance grows between current time and those teams.
Right. It's like how every Wisconsin quarterback is Alex Hornibrook. It doesn't matter. They all are Alex Hornibrook.
They are. That's true.
But, like, you know, we got that vibe a little bit coming out of Columbus, where it's like nobody really has a stranglehold on this job.
And they're just replacing everything. I mean, especially that defensive line last year. That was really, I think, the thing that made that team national championship caliber. Like, Jeremiah Smith is special talent, don't get me wrong. Will Howard was really good on the playoffs. But ultimately what really made that team capable of winning a national championship was that their defensive line dominated week in and week out. And they lost every single one of those guys. And they lost. They also lost their quarterback. They lost both their running backs. They lost, I think, the majority of their offensive line. It is a huge overhaul to just say.
And all the receivers not named Jeremiah Smith. Like, I know correct. They're a receiver.
They bring back Carnell Tate. And, yeah, I mean, they have five stars. Like, they just pick and choose who are, like, whatever five stars they want.
Years, but, like.
It's just it's a total overhaul. And to say, yeah, but it's Ohio State, so they're going to be fine in week one against the number one team in the country with a whole bunch of guys who have never played a meaningful snap before at some really critical positions, including quarterback. Like, oh, by the way, they also have Matt Patricia in his first game as defensive coordinator going against Steve Sarkisian. And I got to tell you, I saw last year a defense that was better than Ohio State's is going to be this year get dog-walked by Steve Sarkisian as a play caller early in the year. I think that is a very real possibility.
Correct. Steve Sarkisian did absolutely eat Wink Martindale's lunch, I fear.
Right. I mean, Steve Sarkisian is one of maybe the best play caller in the country. I think it's him and Lane Kiffin.
Except in the fucking playoff. Year.
Right.
I was so mad. I was like, Sark, where did your bag go?
That goal, yeah. I mean,
the goal.
I don't even want to relive it. But.
I'm mad at Texas. Like, we did our job, Texas.
Correct.
We did what we could do, okay? But, like, it's not. I'm a little surprised by the lines.
I'm surprised. I think Texas wins that game. Honestly, I'll throw that out there.
Interesting.
My name behind that.
Bold. I like it. But yeah, a little surprised by that. Also, I wanted to give a Matt Campbell take because we were talking about this when we were watching Farmageddon. Because I was thinking about it and going, do you remember how much of our fan base, ourselves included, I won't exempt myself from this. I will own up to this take. Wanted Jim Harbaugh fired in favor of Matt Campbell.
Yep.
And, like, we were like, it's not working. And it wasn't working. At the time, it literally was not working, I fear. But then, right, 2021 happens. Iowa State has a down year simultaneously. And, you know, Michigan finally breaks through. They make the playoff. They beat Ohio State, etc. And then everybody is looking back going, see, Michigan fans, it was so dumb. And even Michigan fans were like, other Michigan fans who disagreed with the Michigan fans who wanted to hire Matt Campbell were like, see how dumb you look. And, like, I just want to say I still kind of stand behind my evaluation of Matt Campbell as a coach. Like, might it have been dumb to fire Jim Harbaugh at that exact moment in time, knowing what we know now? Undoubtedly, right? Hindsight, very 2020 on that one. But we saw them showing stats during Farmageddon that suggest that he is winning on average 3 more games per season than Iowa State's historical average number of wins per season.
That's right. Before Matt Campbell, they were averaging 4 wins per season in their history. And I think it said they had 11 seasons ever of 8-plus wins. And he's averaging, like, between 7 and 7.5.
Correct. It was like 7. It was like 7.1. It was exactly 3 above the 4.1 average. And he has, like, 3 or 4 8-win seasons on his own.
Right.
Like, when you're doing that at Iowa State, you're a damn good football coach. I stand by it.
I think he's been a little bit of, when people say the victim of his own success, like, I don't think people realize how bad Iowa State was historically. I mean, if you were to go back 15, 20 years and say, what is the absolute bottom tier of Power 5 football? It had been Vanderbilt, probably Stanford, and Iowa State would have been in there. Iowa State and Kansas both would have been in there. Like, Iowa State was that bad. And to get to a point where a down year for them is 7-5, and we're looking at that and going, oh, man, they're not playing the, like, he's doing worse at Iowa State than Jim Harbaugh's doing at Michigan. Like, that is what Iowa State is supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be much worse than that if you look at their entire history outside of Matt Campbell. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think Matt Campbell's a good coach, and if he ends up somewhere else.
At this point, because, like, that game, kind of interestingly, was between the top 2 kind of preseason projected teams in the Big 12.
Yeah, in the Big 12 coaches poll, it was Kansas State and Iowa State were picked as the top 2 finishers. So
you know, that must.
Are you not trusting Kenny Thrillingham and the Forks Up Arizona State Sun Devils?
I don't know, man. I was laughing at him because a couple weeks ago he was like, yeah, we suck. Like, he just like got up at his press conference and was like, we're a crap football team right now. He's just saying these things. And I'm like, you want to know what? Whether it's a motivational tactics or it's true, I kind of respect it. Like,
no, you have to be crazy like that actually to be a great coach. I mean, how many times do you ever hear Nick Saban be like, hey, if you guys don't want to play fucking football, just get off the field and go drink some water and sit on the side. Like, you have to be an asshole and not ever accept anything less than perfection if you're going to be a great football coach. And Kenny Dillingham might be just that, whatever you call it, threading the needle.
Yes.
That, riding that fine line of, like, being an asshole but being a really good football coach.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. I'm not sure what to make of Arizona State yet. I have to see them without Scadaboo, I think, before I can
decide.
He's a huge loss. But, yeah, we were just so happy to see college football return.
It's so good.
It's perfect. We enjoyed the hell out of it. Stanford got beat by a guy who learned how to play football on YouTube from Japan. This is a perfect sport. This doesn't happen anywhere.
That game also
started
with a safety, by the way.
Did it really?
Yeah, yeah.
A safety?
So Hawaii called for a fair catch on the kickoff, except the ball bounced, which means you don't get it to 25. You get it where you field it if you call for the fair catch on the bounce. So they started at their own one-yard line. They immediately took a drop-back pass where the guy got hit from behind. And so it was 2-0 to start the game.
Perfect.
It is truly the perfect sport.
I think when that game started, I was picking up buffalo chicken dip, as one does. But very funny. I saw the end. I didn't quite see the beginning. But perfect sport. We love it. We're so happy it's back. And we can't wait to be with you to talk about it all the way through freaking January at this point. So,
and to be in the big house in 5 days at this point, maybe less by the time you're listening to this. It's here. And God, it's so good. I'm so excited.
We love it. So if you're still here, thank you for listening, and we will see you back next week.
Go Blue.